Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us, both those in the hall and those at home. Just so we all know, so for those who are online, we have about 40 people in the hall, and about how many people are online? 74. So we have a community. So what I want to talk about this morning with you, share with you, see what you think, is something that really struck me this weekend. I was actually going to talk originally about some Chan Zen teachings that we've been looking at our intensive. But I was struck this weekend. We had usually once a year our Florida Community Mindfulness Board gets together for a retreat to kind of oversee what's been going on. And every year the board sets strategic goals for the community. So we sort of review the old ones, look at the new ones. But what struck me was we begin by reading and looking at our original statement of a vision, mission, and core values. And so in reading them again, I was just struck, sort of, not like I had been part of writing them, but just as a statement, as a human statement of purpose and meaning, how wonderful they were. And then I was really quite happy that a number of our board members, some of who are going on the board this year for the first time, some who are going off the board, and those who just been on the board for a year or two. And, you know, most of the board members have prior experience being on other boards, other nonprofit boards, other religious organizations, et cetera. And what struck me was their comment that as they listened once again, how congruous our community is, the people in our community, the way we operate is with, you know, the mission and the values, and that they've been part of many organizations where the mission value is over here, looks really wonderful, and yet what goes on within the community is over here, and there's a gap, you know, between ideals and practice. And that they felt so far, you know, we are still young, that that is not the case. And so I wanted to share these and talk about them, because again, I don't feel like I'm sharing, a kind of a value statement. I'm sharing really what for each of us, because we are all cells in the body. We're all cells in the body of the world. We're all cells in the body of our country. We're all cells in the body of our sangha, of our community. And each of the cell, if they are healthy, will contribute to making the larger body healthy. So I think it's important that we really understand what we're about as a community. We're not just an institution. We're not just an organization. We're not just somebody who puts on various kinds of activities, which of course we do, but there's a reason behind it. For those of us who are here, it's a bigger picture. Our end game is quite different. And I want to share that with you, because I think, vision, mission, and core values are really what make life meaningful. And that people who do not live with a sense of a vision for their life, and do not live with a sense of the values and how they want to live their life, get astray, and they're easily pushed this way and that way, but their life is, I think, missing a very significant dimension that one has when one lives from a place of vision and value. So I want to share these with you and then talk about them. So the vision, which is like, you know, the vision is like, you know, the top of the mountain, right? So FVM vision is to create a community. Let me just say, these were created maybe 12 years ago, or more by a, you know, a small group, and then it was kind of pushed out into the community to get feedback. So this is really when we first, after being around for many years, and we had bylaws, and you know, they had all the usual kind of stuff, we felt, no, it's time for us to really create a statement which really comes out of organically who we are. So FCN's vision is to create a community and eventually a world where principles of loving kindness, generosity, and selflessness result in global peace, environmental sustainability, and the cessation of suffering for all sentient beings. Sounds pretty good, doesn't it? Yeah, it sounds fun. So, I mean, that says, you know, this is our end game. Even though we are, you know, our life unfolds in a very particular way, day to day, in the course of, life and activities. But there's something that, you know, that we're hoping through the actions of our body, speech, and mind to contribute, right? And so we really believe that through bringing into the world principles of loving kindness, of generosity, which is really openness. It's the opposite of holding on. Generosity is about connection, right? And selflessness, letting go of our attachment to our own individuality, our own needs, my wants, and really entering into the vaster world. Global peace, environmental sustainability, and the cessation of suffering for all beings. So that's kind of the end game. So then the mission, which is now gets more particular, you know, like what's our mission? So we might say, well, there are lots of organizations, right? Religious organizations, non-religious organizations, nonprofits, religious, secular, spiritual, that might say, yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's what we want. But see, we're just one part of that movement, right? And it's like knowing who are we, you see. It's like, like a garden can have many flowers, right? All contributing to the beauty of the garden, but each flower is unique unto itself and has its own contribution. Or like in a vegetable garden, we may say, all the vegetables are nutritious, but each particular vegetable has its own uniqueness, right? And so I think for each of us as individuals and as a community, we have to go, well, what is my unique contribution, right, to the garden of beauty in this life? What is my unique contribution to the health and nutrition of and the nourishment of the world, right? And beings. So in this way, we don't go around, many people go around always with the mind of dissatisfaction. It's like, it's like saying to the, to the melon, well, why aren't you, tasting more like a peach, you see? Or saying to a rose, why aren't you more like a gladiola? You could be doing like that, or, you see, rather than going, oh, I see the beauty and the uniqueness of what's being offered. So to support this vision, Florida Community Mindfulness mission, so what's our mission? Is to offer Buddhist teachings that are relevant to the realities of day-to-day life and lead to personal transformation. So that's our piece, right? That's our piece. Many organizations have many different pieces and many different ways they go about trying to accomplish their goals. But what we particularly attend to, which most organizations don't attend to, which is the inner capacities, right? Like Thich Nhat Hanh says, you want a peaceful world? First become a peaceful person. peaceful people become peaceful, create a peaceful world. Angry people cannot create a peaceful world, right? If you want a world where everybody feels safe, then free yourself of fear. That's how we create a fearless world. You see what I'm saying? So it's this fundamental orientation that the transformation of the world begins with me, begins with us. And then we really, you know, then we have something to offer the world at a deeper level. So we want to offer these teachings, but in a way that is relevant to the day-to-day life of people and lead to personal transformation. FCM provides, which, you know, remember we talked about loving kindness, generosity, and selflessness. So if you say, you know, what are we trying to do? We're trying to transform ourselves to become kind, loving, selfless, open, generous human beings. FCM provides a variety of educational and practice opportunities to support those who sincerely aspire to cultivate wisdom, mindfulness, equanimity, compassion, and joyful selfless service to others. Bodhicitta mindfulness realizes its mission. So how do you, you know, what's the practical? Through the creation and nourishment of a healthy and active Sangha community. Okay, so what is the vessel that holds, you know, that holds these teachings, that holds, it's we create a community. Right, that's the vessel that we can, because alone there's not much, you know, there's very little we can accomplish, right? But together, right, you know, a larger organism has more energy and more focus and more power to reach and transform others. So we want to create and nourish a healthy and active Sangha community. A Sangha community means people who practice these transformative teachings, where teachings and other practice opportunities are shared in an environment of mindfulness and loving kindness under the guidance of a teacher. Okay, so that is our, that's our mission, you see. And, you know, it's a full-time job, just maintaining that. All right. So, you know, and we can talk about this. So, underneath this, then, are the core values. What are these essential principles that are going to underlie, motivate, shape, and guide our community? So this is where I think the members of the board, New and Old, were saying they feel that that we are doing that, not far from perfect, but that there's a genuineness and a congruity of our values to our actions. You know, and many, as you know, many people talk the talk but don't walk the walk. You all know that expression. It's easy to talk the talk, right? It's easy to write. But to live it is a different thing. And so the emphasis of our community is living it. Doing our best to live it, being open to learning how to live it. So we don't want to just talk the talk, we want to walk the walk, this walk of transformation, to really show up in the world in a meaningful way as an individual, as a community. You know, it's easy to send slogans, it's easy to make demands. See, I mean, we live in a society where we go around making demands of others. This is how I want you to be. This is how things should be. But, you know, do we make the effort in our own life, in our own relationships, in our own interactions to be the way we want others to be? You know, we would love it if everybody else was what? Accepting, right? But are we accepting? You know, we all say, oh, you know, we all should accept diversity. But do we accept the diversity of the world, if we're honest? Or do we accept a certain kind of diversity, but don't want to include others in our diversity? Right? We want people to be tolerant of us, but are we tolerant of others? So this gets into the heart of it, you see. So what are these core values? Core values, essential principles that underlie, motivate, shape, and guide our community. And again, I think they are very particular. Some of them, you know, you'll be familiar with, and some of them are particular to a Buddhist community. The first essential principle is awakening. You don't usually see that in mission and value statements of organizations, do you? The first is awakening. What do we want to awaken to? We want to awaken to who we want we really are. We want to awaken to really all the wholesomeness and goodness of the human heart and mind. We want to wake up to that, which is all within us. We all have the potential for that. So that's where we begin. That's what we're helping people do, to wake up to the best in yourself. When you're asleep, there could be lots of things going on around you, right? But you're asleep, so you're not aware, right? When you wake up, you're aware and you see clearly what's here. So it says, first is awakening, and then in it explains, through the practices of mindfulness, deep understanding, wisdom, and compassion, we grow personally, we heal psychologically, and transform our own suffering into the flowering of an awakened being. You know, in Buddhism, very common metaphor is the lotus that grows in the mud. Maybe you've heard that. And it's a metaphor for what I just said. We don't create our spirituality in some alternative universe where everything is blissful and peaceful and right. No, we grow the flowers of awakening in the mud. Right? Anybody know about lotuses? They grow in the mud. They grow in the muck. And yet they're very beautiful. So we in you know, the mud is the mud of our own muddiness. The mud is the muddiness of the world. This world is very muddy, very mucky, dirty. Many of us, our minds are that way. So we don't turn away from that. It's right. We embrace the world as it is. We embrace ourselves as it is, and through these transformative practices, we grow flowers. We use Buddhist meditative practices to rediscover eternal truths about reality through direct investigation and experience rather than through blind faith in dogma. So we are experimental. This is not about learning just a teaching, right? This is about having direct experience ourselves. So, you know, and this goes back to the Buddha. The Buddha said to his disciples, you know, don't just accept what I say blindly because you love me or respect me because I'm the Buddha, you know. Take it into yourself. Does it accord with your experience? Does it accord with your logic, you know? And only then practice it. So in that sense, we are not promulgating dogma. Whatever we teach, we say, yeah, test it, practice it. So that's number one, awakening. Second is non-denominational Buddhism. While practicing within the Mahayana Zen tradition, and again, my teaching lineage is from Thich Nhat Hanh, who is a Zen master. His lineage goes back to Lin Chi in China, and then back through Bodhidharma. To the Buddha, as well as he has a transmission of a lineage that was indigenous to, well, I mean, Buddhism always came from India, but grew up directly in Vietnam from India. So even though that is our tradition, We take inspiration and guidance from the full breadth of Buddhist teaching. So that's another way we are a little different here. Many of you who've been around go to the Buddhist groups and they practice just in a very kind of linear tradition. But even though we have a tradition, we access the full breadth of the Buddhist teachings. We are creative and experimental in our forms, since we desire to be relevant and accessible to American culture, issues, and vernacular. So we don't want to just transmit. You know, Buddhism has always been very creative and has always entered the culture of its country. So if you went to Tibet, if you went to Vietnam, if you went to Korea and experienced Buddhism, you would see, wow, there's a lot of difference in how they practice, even though they're all practicing essentially the same teachings and practices. So Buddhism has very much adopted the culture and the vernacular of the country it's entered. That's one of its strengths, okay? We live in very interesting times where we have Buddhist traditions from almost every Asian country coming to America, in America, right? And what they're often transmitting is, you know, 50% Buddhism and 50% culture, because their Buddhism grew up in a culture, right? And so it's very important that we understand that, and that we as American Buddhists in our modern times with our own modern issues and culture and what we're dealing with, take the wisdom and the experience of these Buddhist traditions, but also understand that a lot of it is cultural and we want, and that can just get in the way. I mean, Thich Nhat Hanh, when I first met him the first time back in the 70s, he said, American Buddhism has to be American, right? Has to be, everything needs to be taught in English, and the images and everything have to be relevant to the culture and has to speak to the issues of modern people. So we are creative and experimental in our form, since we desire to be relevant and accessible to American culture, issues, and vernacular. We apply the Buddhist teachings based on their appropriateness to the individuals being taught and practice skillfulness in their application. So again, we're not just, it's not a cookie cutter approach. It's not just a passing on. It's going, you know, who are we? Who's coming to our community? You know, where are they at? What are their needs? And how can we make the teachings and the practices relevant to them? Okay. So this is very important that our approach is again, you know, experimental, creative. We're always testing. A lot of our programs and the things you see we offer a lot, they've all been tested. You know, we go, maybe we could develop a program along this line to help people. And then we test. We see, is it effective? Is it helpful? Is it meeting people's needs? And we're always retesting, right? We're always in that process. So our first is this emphasis on awakening transformation. Second is non-denominational Buddhism. We're not trapped within a certain lineage. We're willing to take the full breadth of Buddhist experience. And again, this comes from Thich Nhat Hanh. Third, community. So again, we are the Florida Community of Mindfulness, but it's not just a name. It means we are very actively creating community, right? It's interesting that is it a little warm in here? Yeah, it is a little warm in here. And for some reason, those fans are off. Is there a reason they're off? See, I'm trying to be relevant to the culture. We like to be comfortable, right? We don't like to be too hot. So, community, you know, I mean, there's lots of sociological research is showing on that people's sense of community is quickly unraveling in modern times, right? I mean, all the things that kept people connected, big extended families, people living in the same neighborhood and growing up in the neighborhood, people having the same job for 40 years, you know, there was lots of having a common culture, right? So, you know, we know we live in a time of great separation, which creates a lot of aloneness. And so we recognize that to create community, especially healthy communities that nurture people and where people can connect to each other in a healthy way, is very much part of our mission. We're not just here like today, you know what I mean? I mean, this is offered to anybody, anybody. I don't know if you're a member or non-member, anybody can come. But within our community, people who are members, we are consciously creating community, fostering relationships. So it says, having the support and personal connection with the Sangha, which is a Buddhist word for the Buddhist community, of spiritual friends and caring for each other are key elements of Buddhist practice. They're not sidelines, you see. You know, our practice is mindfulness and meditation. And then, you know, it's, yeah, we want to be at least, you know, say hello to the person sitting next to us after, you know, right? No, we take connection and relationship and how we are with each other as our practice. Or else what meaning does it have, you know, to do loving kindness meditation if we're not kind to each other, right? To do compassion meditation if we're not caring about each other's suffering, then again, there's incongruence. We seek to live our path with the support of our harmonious practice community. Sangha building is in itself a meaningful and deep practice which embodies interconnection instead of separateness. So, as a community, and this is right from the beginning, we have been very committed to building a community as a practice because we feel that is essential. Because, you know, Thich Nhat Hanh, this is, he says, in this modern age where there's such materialism, there's such consumerism, you know, and of course this was all before media and so many things pulling people into busyness, you know, people cannot really go deep into their process of mindfulness, meditation, transformation without the support of others. Very difficult. So he really stresses the importance of building community to support individual transformation. So Sangha building, you know, so it's not like, you know, our practice is Buddhist teachings and Buddhist meditation, and then you know, it's nice to kind of create a decent community to support that. No, building community is our practice, right? Because we wanna create a world where people are in harmonious, positive communion with each other. And again, it's easy to talk the talk and say that, but who wants to get into the nitty-gritty work of building it day after day and supporting it and teaching people how to live, you know, with people who disagree with you, how to solve conflicts without it breaking down into anger and resentment, right? You see? How to you know, live together harmoniously. I mean, it sounds bizarre, but that is a major challenge, right? I mean, anybody ever been in a modern relationship? Piece of cake to live in harmony? Here we go. So, you know, where are we going to learn this? You know, we could want harmony in the world and why doesn't everybody get along? And we can't even get along with our partner. Right? We can't even get along with our neighbors. You see what I'm saying? We can't even get along with our cousins who see things differently than we do. Right? And yet we want the world to get along when we can't even get along. So, we need, I mean, am I making sense? You know, there's got to be somewhere where we learn this and we can demonstrate it. You know, if we can't do it, then who can do it? You see? Because we have the technology, we have the teachings, we have good people. You know, if we can't create that, then how can we expect the world to create it? You know, one of Thich Nhat Hanh's great statements while he was still able to communicate, you know, about the you know, the possibility of human beings, you know, stopping their great blind march to self-destruction, you know, he said, you know, how can you expect human beings who can't even acknowledge their own suffering and take care of their own suffering to acknowledge the suffering of the world, the suffering of the planet, right? You see, I mean, we make, I mean, am I making myself clear? You see? So if people can't wake up to their own suffering, their own meaninglessness, their own greed, their own living, living just, you know, for themselves, as individuals, how can we expect collectively to people to care about everyone else and make decisions to benefit everyone else? I mean, they can't even make decisions to really benefit themselves, right? So Sangha building in itself is a meaningful and deep practice, which embodies interconnection instead of separateness. Inclusiveness. Our community is open to anyone who's dedicated to following this path. We respect and encourage diversity. We have a totally wide open door. Anybody can join FCM. Anybody can participate in FCM, right? There's no barriers. There's no division. There's no any of that. We are inclusive. Again, not as an ideology, but as a practice, how we relate to one another. The next one is mindful living. We practice an engaged form of Buddhism, meaning a Buddhism that is relevant to the lives of our members and the society we live in. And engaged Buddhism is a term, you know, that really was developed by Thich Nhat Hanh, who grew up in a culture where when people talked about being Buddhist or practicing Buddhism, and Vietnam was primarily a Buddhist country, they would talk about it, according to him, as they go to the temple. They practice Buddhism because they go to the temple and they support the monks and the nuns and they make offerings and they go there for holidays. You know, it's like, that's where we practice Buddhism. At home, I don't know what people did at home. So, you know, and especially because his society was, you know, not only just suffering, but it was in great, you know, the war and great divisiveness and families, you know, because of what was going on in Vietnam. In the 60s, he really felt that, you know, that as long as Buddhism just was over here as this kind of religious practice and wasn't relevant to the lives that people were living in society, it was really making itself almost irrelevant, right? So he developed this whole idea of engaged Buddhism, which is, you know, we have to have something to say to help families live together in harmony. We have to have something to say to help societies live together in harmony, right? We can't, you know, that has to be our Buddhist practice. It has to happen in society. It has to happen, you know, and, you know, we're society. So hopefully, you know, the teachings you get here are not centered here. This is where we come to learn. This is where we come to be energized. But we're taking the practices out into our lives, wherever we are, with our families, our relationships, our work, our communities. Relevant to the lives of our members and society we live in. We primarily utilize the broad traditional teachings and practices of Buddhism applied in the context of modern life. That means what? So we say things like, you know, the traditional teachings and practices of Buddhism, you know, like it's a thing. See, to me, as an American, I didn't grow up Buddhist. When I discovered Buddhist teachings, when I discovered Buddhist practices, I was like, I'd found a treasure. I was like, wow. You know, there is this 2,600-year-old tradition of human beings just like me from all these different cultures, you know, and they have been cultivating and experimenting with the human condition and human suffering for 2,600 years and coming up with answers to why people suffer and how to be happy and how to free oneself from suffering. I mean, I was like, it was a great relief, you see, because when you're a seeker, you're always looking, you know, you see what I'm saying? And when you become a finder, you become very happy. Oh, I can relax. I don't have to be seeking anymore, you know. And again, it's not like I found, you know, like an ideology. It's not like I found a book. I found a whole vast stream of wisdom coming from all these different cultures over thousands of years that I can access, right? For my own personal transformation and to teach me and show me how to show up in the world in a meaningful way. So we want to take these traditional teachings and practices of Buddhism and apply them in the context of modern life. Again, that's the creative part of what we do. As a community of lay practitioners, so this is another unique thing. See, I don't know how strange this looks to you, but I would say if you came from a traditional Buddhist culture and you came here to the Florida Community Mindfulness, this would look very strange to you. Anybody wonder why? Why would this look strange for those who have come from Buddhist cultures? Because of me, right? Because the one sitting up here teaching the Dharma is not wearing a robe, doesn't have a shaven head, is not an ordained monk or nun, right? They go, what is this? You see? So this is very unusual. We may think this is usual because this is what's sort of happening in America, but traditionally Buddhism, this is very unusual. So the fact that we have a lay community that is lay run is in the history of Buddhism is very unusual. And again, if it's American Buddhist, we might not know that. Because again, we grew up in a culture where, outside of Catholicism, you know, our ministers, our pastors, our rabbis, our imams, they're all, you know, married people. So we're not, you know what I'm saying? It's to see this is not unusual, but this is very new for Buddhism. It's part of the experiment. As a community of lay practitioners, we learn how to live an awakened life in the midst of our relationships and everyday activities. Next Saturday, I'm giving a workshop entitled To Live in the World and Not Be of the World. I mean, there it is. That's our challenge. We are lay people. We are householders. We live in the world. We have houses. We pay rent. We pay mortgages. We have jobs. And we have families. We have children. You know what I mean? We have desires. We have needs. We have relationships. How can we live in this world and yet not let it, you know, be so disturbing to us? That's our challenge. We are dedicated to living a meaningful, open, and joyful life guided by the five mindfulness trainings of the Plum Village tradition. These are, and again, we do these on other days, but this means, you know, we have an ethical component to our life, which guide us. We're dedicated to living a meaningful, open, joyful life guided by the, because again, as long as the behavior of our body, speech, and mind is unethical, is not grounded in the principles of doing no harm to ourselves or anybody else, it's very hard to live a conflict-free life, you know? So we take kind of the ethical ground of our life seriously because we don't want to do harm to ourselves or anybody else anymore, to the best of our ability. Our next core value is service. We help bring joy and reduce suffering by being of service to our families, our communities, and our society. We practice selflessness and love in action and give generously of our time and resources to those in need. When engaged in activities to benefit and heal our world, our actions are based in selflessness, mental and emotional calmness, nonviolence, compassion, and deep acceptance of what is. What do you think? Easy? No. Unfortunately, it takes time to develop those qualities. Just by hearing the words, just by doing some practice or reading a book, doesn't mean, yeah. So we understand that personal transformation and to become that healthy cell that can actually go into the world, can go into the world of conflict and pain, and maintain one's healthy mind, maintains one's openness, maintain one's loving kindness and compassion, not get burnt out, not get despairing, not get angry, not get fearful. It takes practice. And that's, you know, again, I mean, that's a problem with us as Americans, right? We are what? What? Quick fix, you know? I mean, that's why for many people, you know, meditation, mindfulness is difficult because they want a peaceful mind, they just don't want to what? Learn how to tame their own minds. Unfortunately, there's no other way unless you go down the route of what? Intoxicants, you know, there are other ways of inducing that. But unfortunately, there are downsides to that way of living. There are no downsides to this way of living. So we practice selflessness. We care about others. We see our connection to others. Love in action. That's another term from Thich Nhat Hanh, right? Love in action. We act in the world in a loving, caring way to everyone, to the best of our ability. But where do we begin? And I mean, it sounds great, doesn't it? Where do we begin? Well, yeah, can I be loving to myself? Can I have a loving, it's not like I go, I love you, Fred. I love you, love you, love you. No, it's not that. Love, Thich Nhat Hanh says, love is understanding. Love is acceptance. You know, are we loving of ourselves that we accept ourselves as we are and we only want the best for ourselves? You know, am I that way for myself? Two, am I that way for the people around me? You know, we could want it to be a loving world, but if I can't be loving to myself or loving to those around me, then it's just what? Nice words. We practice selflessness, love in action, and give generously of our time or resources to those in need. When engaged in activities to benefit and heal our world, our actions are based on selflessness, mental and emotional calmness, nonviolence, compassion, deep acceptance of what is. See, I believe right now, what we're doing right now, we are engaged in an activity to benefit and heal the world. And this is not congruous with our society, because our society says what? If you really want to change the world, get out there, with a placard or demand of the world. Tell people what you think. But to me, this is really the deeper work, right? This is an activity to benefit and heal our world. And if more people were doing this, it'd be much less of the problems that we see all the time. And this takes time. And this takes creating organizations, institutions, places that can be a nexus of healing. I mean, to me, that's what a Buddhist center should be. A meditation should be. It should be a place where people can come and heal and be nourished, right? By the teachings, by the practices, so they can transform their life, so they can transform their relationships, right? And it ripples out. The next is deep sharing, deep listening. And these are practices, that come from Thich Nhat Hanh. We create trust within our community of practitioners to encourage speaking from our hearts and listening to each other without judgment. This is a practice that we're working on. How often do we listen to others without in our mind rebutting? I mean, who knows? There could be people listening to my talk right now who are already processing it. Right? Deep listening means you listen below the word to get the spirit of what's being presented. But if all we're doing is endlessly processing things in our own mind, we're never getting anybody else. We're never hearing anybody else. Even in our closest relationships, we don't listen. Right? To listen is to be open and to go, you know, what's really going on with that person? What are they really trying to say to me, right? So this is a practice we do. And deep sharing means, my sharing is not superficial. I'm willing to share generally who I am and what's really going on with me. You know, so in our community, we really value genuineness, authenticity. We encourage people, learn how to, you know, we encourage people to be who you are and to feel free to speak, no matter what it is, what's really going on with you. And we, the listener, will just listen. We'll not judge. We'll just listen. Why? Because we want to understand you. Deep practice. And the last is direct transmission. Our teachers have received their authorization from the continuous lineage of the Buddha. The direct relationship between teacher and student is central to the true Dharma transmission within the Buddhist tradition. So again, and this is very much part of the traditions in Buddhism, in which awakening is kind of, you know, very much the goal, right? That, so let me just talk about Zen. There are those other traditions that also have this, that this is not a transmission that is passed on by having a degree in Buddhist studies. Okay? This is a transmission. It's a living transmission that who's ever teaching has gotten the authorization to teach from their teacher. And their teacher had got it from their teacher. It's like I said earlier, Thich Nhat Hanh, you know. He can trace his lineage back to Lin Chi, this great Shan Zen master in China, who can trace his lineage back to Bodhidharma, who came from India. And then there is a transmission line that goes back to the Buddha, all right? So traditionally, the transmission is a living tradition between teacher and student. But you can go to many places these days and that doesn't occur, right? You know, the teacher is over here and just kind of talking to the students. Or you may go for an interview and the teacher doesn't know who you are. And these days people, I mean, I meet people all the time who, you know, practice Buddhism online, right? Go to retreats online, you know, with hundreds and hundreds of, you know what I mean? So anyhow, I won't say anything about that. But in our community, we value living transmission, right? That students know their teacher know their students. Right? We're a family. Okay? So this living transmission, and that you know that Fred is not making this stuff up, right? That Fred has authorization to teach from Thich Nhat Hanh. Okay. And I'm not saying that to build up Fred. I mean, he can be a complete idiot. But you know that his authorization to teach comes from an authentic master like Thich Nhat Hanh, okay. Which is, again, in terms of maintaining the quality of the transmission, that is very important, right? Because how do you keep the quality of the transmission alive if there's nobody checking? Do you know what I'm saying? And that checking is very important. So that is another part of our community. So that is the vision, mission, and core values of our community. I was happy to be part of the retreat with the new board. I am actually not on the board, but they invite me to sit into their meetings because they actually oversee me. They could, cut me off anytime they want. That is their power. So anyhow, it's a pleasure being with them this weekend, and pleasure to be with all of you and to share. Because again, I think it's important for those of you who are relating to us in any way, checking us out, or part of this community, entering the community, long-term members, always remember this is what we're about. We may get involved in the day-to-day details of practice and running a community, but there's something we're trying to do here to bring benefit to many, transmit something that to me is very essential for this world. It's not being transmitted on every block. So we're very fortunate to have this here. So having said that, I am open to questions, comments. In the hall, or anybody's new, we put our hands up and somebody will bring you a mic. And if anybody's online, please just chat in your question and Ray Lynn's there. So are there any questions about what has been said? Yes, Angie? No question. Here, Willette, why don't you?
Not a question so much, but perhaps before you close this morning, mm-hmm. you might say a few words about the member survey that was recently sent out, because it ties so much into our aspiration for creating meaningful creative programs and community connection.
Okay. So I will say that before I end today, but please remind me, and thank you for reminding me. So are there any questions about what I've said so far? Any question about the values or what they mean, the vision? Silence means...
I have a question.
Yes, Raven.
I was just curious if you'll be sharing at some point what was discussed in that meeting, because I'm interested in...
Yeah. So the question was, so I believe sometime in January there will be a sharing of that meeting and the evaluation of the priorities of 2021. And, for 2022, is that part of the website available to all members?
Priorities are listed on the bottom of the organization page.
So if you went to, shows you where I'm at. If you went to our website, how would you find it? So I'm a stranger.
I think it's under community and then organization. And at the bottom of the page, it has the 2021 priorities. And so those will be updated with the 2022 priorities. And we'll have on January 23rd a gathering to do a community update and provide that information.
Okay. Thank you.
And Mindfulness Matters will also have that information.
Okay, that's our weekly newsletter. So any questions or any comments?
I've got a question here.
Yes.
In what ways does FCM connect to the community where it's located?
You mean in an active way? Well, again, do they mean like the physical community that's around us?
I think that's what he means, is the physical community where we are in Seminole Heights.
Yeah, so, that's an interesting question. People often say, well, how come we're not doing more of this? Or how come you're not doing more of that? And my answer is, we're very new. it takes time to... it's taken years to build this facility, to maintain this facility. It takes time for people to develop. You know, that's, I think, part of our American thing is let's go out and do something. You know, Thich Nhat Hanh was the great one that said, no, you know, when he first heard, you know, I don't know if it's just American, you know, don't just stand there, do something. And his response was, don't just do something, stand there. Because he felt, you know, people run around doing, thinking they're doing good, and they often are not doing all that much good, or they may not be doing good at all. So certainly, if you ask me my concerns, first is to establish a community, a physical base, which we're still doing, a place, you know, of beauty, of harmony, that people just come here. I mean, we're about to start, you know, landscaping our property more, to create a place of great beauty, where people just come here and they can find peace and harmony in nature, you know, right here on Nebraska Avenue. You walk around Nebraska Avenue, you don't see a lot of beauty. I want to create beauty right here on Nebraska Avenue. You know, we are available to our community. I mean, many people who come here, many of you who are here, live in Tampa. I mean, you're the community. You know, in terms of, you know, I know many of our members are involved in community activities in many different ways, doing good. I think that's wonderful. I mean, that's any way that you can help others, oh, please do. But in terms of a targeted outreach, no, we haven't done it yet. Not why that we may not in time. I mean, we, you know, it's, again, I think Angie's going to say, you know, we've responded. Yeah, we, you know, thank you, Andrew. So, yeah, I mean, we have responded. We've over the years had a relationship with Metropolitan Ministries and have worked with them. Betsy has been working with a program for teen homeless to work with them. We have a prison dharma, you know, people go into prison. So, I mean, we have done cleanups up and down Nebraska Avenue. So, I mean, we are responding, but, yeah, you know, and I encourage people. You know, it's funny, people wait. I don't like to wait. I think if you're a member of our community and you want to do something, you know, do it. And, you know, put out the word to others, anybody want to join me? But it's almost like I feel sometimes people, you know, always looking to Papa, you know, tell us first so we can do it. You know, to me, Adam, that's not empowering. I mean, to me, my job is to empower people, right? And then it's up to you to decide how you want to manifest, right, in the world. You know, I think it's too much, you know, we're always looking to others. How come you're not doing it? Why don't you do it? Don't always be looking over your shoulder to see what everybody else is doing. Just do it. Even if no one else is doing it, do it. I think that's the way to live, with a lot of integrity and personal responsibility. You know, live the way you want in the world, right? And if you're, you know, if you have some power, energy, charisma, maybe you'll attract other people to join you in that endeavor. And I think that's wonderful. How else is the world going to change? But again, the whole reason for sharing the mission and the values is to say, this is our piece of the pie, you see? This is our piece of the pie. There are many pieces of the pie. There are many organizations that are doing good in the community, right? Join them, support them, work with them, you know? You know, I'm involved with, But for me, as the founder teacher here, you know, just to maintain the integrity of our mission, just to keep all our programs qualitative, just to always keep responding creatively, right, to the needs of people. I mean, that takes time. That takes focus. That takes energy. I don't want to take my focus off of that. And, you know, we need a core of people to maintain this. I mean, people say, wow, we offer so many programs, there's so much, you know, go on. It's all members. Nobody gets paid here, Right? All our offerings are members. All the back stuff is members. All the weeding is members. All the planting is members. All the stuff online is all members. Right? You know, we don't have a staff. So to maintain what we do, I mean, there are probably 75 different members just involved in all different levels of our community. Right? So you have to feel what you're doing is valuable, you see. If you think it's more valuable to serve in the soup kitchen, then go serve in a soup kitchen. I mean, I think that's wonderful. But, you know, I'm a great believer in, you know, you give a person, again, I'm a vegan, so I shouldn't say this, but it is a statement. You feed somebody, you give somebody a fish, you know, you feed them for one meal. You teach somebody how to fish, you feed them for a lifetime. I think there's a lot of wisdom in that. You know, we want to teach people how to transform themselves and be good human beings in life, right? And that takes time. And not everybody's interested, you know? Not everybody's interested in that, are they? I used to joke years ago when I was in Naples, we spent the Naples Community of Mindfulness, and we were upstairs in a yoga studio, I think on Sunday night, and we were growing. You know, we started out, there'd be 15, then there were 20, 25, 30. People go, wow, we're really growing. And I joke with them and say, I'd say, you know, on the way out, check the parking lot. You know, there was a Mexican restaurant next door. I say, see how many cars are there for the Mexican restaurant? You know, I mean, that's where people are at, right? I mean, this is the society we live. So, but slowly we'll work to change this world. So on that note, I'll stop you. Oh, thank you, Angie. So this is for members. This is very important. We have now 350 members. We keep growing. And so we have, you know, 100 new members in the last couple of years. And so we wanted to, at least me, I wanted to really get a sense, who is our membership and what are their needs and are we meeting their needs? And so please, this is for members. You have just received a survey that several of our members put a lot of energy in, you know, people who are professionals and know about these things. So everyone has gotten this survey. Please take 10 minutes to answer that. Don't put it off, because that's really going to be part of our process. Again, that's part of our creative process. We're not just resting on our laurels. We don't know. You know, are we really benefiting people? Or, you know, are we benefiting? You know, we have lots of newer members. A lot of our newer members over these last couple of years are younger members, right? You know, are we relevant to them? Are, you know, which programs do you find most meaningful? Which do you feel less? And so this is all going to be correlated. So please fill that out. You can see who I take my orders from.